That's tough.
You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. This is Commander Tom, and welcome to the American Hour. I'm broadcasting live from almost Boston, where my lovely co-host, Paula Lazon-Ostman, is also broadcasting. Paula, good evening. How are you?
Doing excellent, Tom. How are you doing?
Good. Well, I'm in an undisclosed location where my signal is not that great, so just be ready to jump in there and cover for me if I suddenly drop off. But it looks like we're doing pretty good now. And the reason I said almost Boston is because I flew into Boston today to go visit my parents in their undisclosed location, but they're in a neighboring state. So that's where we're at. So I'm almost in Boston. A couple hours ago, I was in Boston. And unfortunately, it wasn't one of these nice, lovely summer-slash-fall days in Boston. You know that, Paula, because you live there. It was a kind of drizzly, overcast, cloudy day all day. And so it affected us getting in on time and all that kind of thing. But in any case, we have our good friends Dick and Ann Birnbeck joining us today. Dick and Ann, how are you tonight?
Doing good, Tom. Thank you.
Doing just fine.
All right. Awesome. And, of course, Dick has lined up another great guest for us.
Rhonda's
going to be on the show.
She's on hold.
Okay, yeah, go ahead and bring her up. I'll introduce her. Rhonda is a school teacher currently, and she's well-versed in Agenda 21. We've done the show in the past on Agenda 21. We've had some other good guests on. And I think Diane Kepis was on and talked about the effects on our school. But we've got a currently teaching teacher, and we'll just call her Rhonda. That may or may not be her real name, but she's going to talk to us about the effect that it's having on our schools and what parents need to understand what this Agenda 21 is doing. It's having a wide range of effects. We're going to kind of focus on the education aspect of it tonight, but Rhonda, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and we've talked amongst ourselves about the fact that the presidential debate is going to be tonight, so we're going to try and keep things under the hour mark because it's going to start, I believe, at 8. Now, you know how these things go. It'll drag out.
Right.
They probably won't really be debating until 8:30. But we got plenty of time to talk to you about Agenda 21 and the effect on our schools. Tell the audience a little bit about yourself. Well, you don't have to reveal precisely who you are, but you're a teacher, and how long you've been teaching and that kind of thing.
I've been teaching for almost 15 years, and I've taught in all grade levels, K through 6, and even in the beginning of my career, I had some experience subbing in the high school level. So experience across the board, 3 different districts, 2 different states, and that's pretty much it as far as my teaching career goes.
Okay.
Just a veteran
now, when did
teacher.
You first become? Yeah, okay. Well, now, when did you first become aware of Agenda 21? And then tell us a little bit about, some of the highlights about what the problem is with this.
Well, I'd never heard of it, no clue about any of it until I started my campaign for school board. I campaigned last year for school board. And basically, I'm just fed up with a lot of the things going on in the district, and I decided that was one way I could get out there and try to fight it and try to turn things around, maybe do what's right. And as I started attending different meetings through the 9/12 groups and the Tea Party groups and meeting different people, I started learning more and more and more, just getting deeper and deeper. And I just overloaded with information. So really didn't hear about it until last year and just took off from there.
Okay, great. Now, tell us what really stands out in your mind about not only Agenda 21 and what the potential it has for affecting our schools, but what are you already seeing creeping into our schools via Agenda 21?
Oh, wow. I can give one example. One example is mission statements at schools. Every school has like a vision statement, what they want to accomplish with their students. And a few years back, we had a new principal. And so as a group, we came up with a new vision statement. And, of course, this is before I knew anything about Agenda 21. And now that I know about it, I look back at this vision statement and I say, oh, my goodness, what are we doing? The end of it, it's about, you know, teaching the children to succeed in a diverse global economy. And so those words like global and diverse, they're creeping in all over the place. Something I've said, too, and I told Dick this, was I believe at the local level and at the school level, the teachers, it's unintentional. They don't really know what they're doing, and they don't realize what they're doing when it comes to incorporating things like that, because they're not aware of Agenda 21 and what the higher-ups are trying to accomplish.
Okay.
So little things like that here and there are creeping in.
Now, is there anything you're aware of that has to do with Agenda 21 that is not being implemented right now, but you see coming down the pike possibly that would be damaging?
The only thing I can think of was the one thing that we found when we sat down together at Dick and Ann's to discuss the textbook group, and it became public knowledge, and we all became aware that the school board had signed on to something, an agreement with the county, about it had something to do with helping to create the communities and, you know, the walking districts, and in other words, they, you know, keeping everything in one area, the sustainable community.
Right,
exactly.
That would be the smart growth, Rhonda.
So it's smart growth, right.
Yeah, so now what they're doing is indoctrinating our kids into, you know, kind of getting along with this, finding it acceptable so that as they grow up, they're going to want to implement this. And all this really is taking us back to, you know, tribal communities, the Stone Age, the Dark Ages, whatever you want to talk about, where we're not a global community. We're independent little isolated communities, and that's how they can control us better than if we truly were a global community. We're a global community now. I fly, you know, an airplane. I just got back from Madrid a couple days ago, and I fly all over South America. But really what they're talking about is, Tom, you don't have to fly around like that anymore, fly people around, because they don't need to get anywhere. They just need to stay in their little village, in their little hovel, and we'll take care of everything, and you just do what we tell you. That's really what they're driving at, is control, world dominance and control via the elites, is the way I read it. But the other thing that I see myself going on in schools is just that, the textbooks, how they're altering them. They're trying to blur the lines of our history and the founding of this great nation to drive kids in the direction of believing that, you know, there really is no history and purpose for the way our government has been set up and the way our country has developed over time. So they're trying to blur those lines. And back in my, I don't want to call it hometown, I've lived all over the place my whole life, but I grew up for part of my young life in Tucson, Arizona. And Tucson High, believe it or not, which was on the other side of town from where I lived, has been teaching a Hispanic history course where they're teaching that the Incas ruled all the way up into the Southwest, and that this was really owned by the Mexicans from a long time ago, when in fact they had a small portion of area that they ruled and controlled way down in the Latin America area, the bottom of Mexico there. They never came anywhere near. So they're lying to the kids outright in these courses about American and Mexican history. I mean, they're outright bold-faced lies. And so some of the parents started calling them on this. Now that turns into race baiting. Oh, you're just Mexicans, and on and on and on. But the lies, and that's where parents have to be diligent. Pay attention to what your kids are reading, especially when it comes to history. Math is pretty straightforward, but history can really be altered and twisted and undone and unraveled. So that would be my advice to parents. Really look at the history aspect of it. Second of all, government, if they're taking any government classes, mm-hmm. take a look at what's being taught. Take a look at the textbook and their homework and see if they're being given the true and accurate picture of what, for example, I'll say this, I don't want to hurt anybody's feeling that's listening out there, it might be a Democrat, but the Democrat Party was the party of slavery, wasn't the Republicans. Thomas Jefferson, they go, oh, well, he was a slave owner. He was the first president to legitimately propose the abolition of slavery. It didn't go anywhere, but he proposed it, and he tried to push it through.
Right.
It's the Republican Party and the party of Lincoln that did abolish
slavery. That's not being taught correctly either. And in the elementary level, social studies is just disappeared altogether. And I taught fifth grade for a number of years, and fifth grade is the year you teach American history up to World War II. And it's all about, well, if you get to it, if you don't get to it, don't worry about it because there's no test for it.
Yeah, yeah. So, that's because it's not important. It's not important.
Right.
Well, you know, it is very important because this is how we're going to sustain our nation. But in any case, what kind of response have you gotten when you've talked with other teachers or even administrators, superintendents, principals about this subject? Are you getting the stiff arm on this, or are they listening to you?
They don't listen to me. They hear me start talking, and their eyes glaze over, and they just don't want to hear it because, like I said, at the local level, they're just completely oblivious to it all and don't want to believe it. Even if they understood it, they wouldn't want to believe it, and they don't believe it because they don't think that they could actually be implementing something like this,
right?
Or that the people above them could be leading them down the path to implement something like this.
Tom, can I comment on
this? Go ahead, please, Dick.
Rhonda, I've got a sister-in-law that lives in Minnesota. She's getting up there in age, and what she does for entertainment is donates her time at the grade schools, helping the teacher with the students, reading to them, teaching them numbers, stuff like this. They break into small groups. Because of mine and Ann's association, we're always sending her stuff on what's going on in the school system. And she presented this to a few teachers saying, what's going on here? And like you, they don't want to recognize that it's happening. I'm an ostrich. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stick my head in the sand. It'll go away.
Right.
She did find one teacher that smiled and said, you know what's going on. That is all going on, and they don't want to listen to it.
Yep. Yep. That's exactly right. They don't want to believe it. They're on a daily basis where we are as teachers in our little box, literally, in our little classroom box, and we have these children and these wonderful sponge minds that we're teaching all this great information to, that to think that something that powerful could be coming down from above and doing any damage is just a horrible thought, and nobody wants to believe it.
These are supposed to be educated people. They've gone to college.
Mm-hmm. But nowhere in my college training, I can tell you my college training, my personal experience, nowhere did I ever have to take any kind of I had to take American history, but as far as the extent of my historical knowledge and classes that I had to take, it was very limited. I didn't ever have to take any kind of economics class either, which blows my mind, you know, that people don't understand the way the economy works too. And they're in our classrooms teaching the kids.
Yeah, it's quite honestly, what you have are people that are not qualified to be teaching those things. Things that need to be taught, but they're not even qualified to, unfortunately, because as you just told us, it's not being stressed in the requirements for teachers to ensure. So we're going to get personal views, and politics are going to start playing a factor in the history of our country as being taught to our kids. When the history is the history, you know, there were politics involved in what went on in the history, but the history is fact. And I've seen people distort it. I've had people tell me things that maybe didn't realize I know as much about history as I do, and then they put their foot in their mouth, but it's something they've believed for maybe their whole life, and they were completely wrong. So it's definitely parents really have to be proactive on this stuff, and it's going to be a problem. See, this is how many people have said to you, Dick and Paula, lately that, boy, we've been asleep at the wheel for way too many years, and we've let these politicians get away with way too much stuff. Don't you think that if we were better educated throughout our lives about government and the role of government and our founders, et cetera, that we would have a lot more engaged, or would have had a lot more engaged citizens a long time prior to this.
Yeah. Can I, before I forget my point here, I was wondering, asking an opinion from any of us. My aunt was a math teacher, and she ended up teaching English. And I'm wondering if that, thinking back now, is that on purpose? They're having them teach something they don't know anything about. I'm wondering if that's one of the ways they got this through. I know my history teacher, when I was in high school, read directly from the history book. That's all he did. It was absolutely ridiculous. I think I remember 6 weeks on civics and that sort of stuff, and that was it. But I did want to bring one other thing up that I found out from Karen Schoen when we were up at the Agenda 21 conference up in Milton, Florida, that she found out that I believe it's Houghton, Mifflin, and Harcourt that are printing the books. And she found out where they're printing them, why they're being written and printed. It's Dubai. The people that own that company now are Islam. Mm. That's that.
Doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Well, okay. So there could definitely be an agenda there behind Agenda 21.
Yep.
Karen's a great, great resource. I spoke with her a lot, and she gave me a lot of my knowledge about it, too. She's a great resource.
Well, now, Rhonda, let me ask you this. Are you in a teacher's union?
No, I am not.
Okay. What percentage of teachers in Florida are in a union? Is that something that's big in Florida or not?
I wouldn't know statewide. I'm not sure of the numbers, but I do know I've been in three different districts in Florida. The first district that I worked in, I started out as a newbie, young, fresh out of college from the north. I thought I was supposed to join. I didn't know any better. So when I first started, I joined. And then as the months went by, I realized, why are they taking all this money from me and doing nothing for me? I'm like, there's no point in this. And just my own thought process, plus the fact that my best friend and roommate at the time was in business and kept saying, well, why would you even have a union? What do they, you know, what's the purpose? You work for somebody, you do what they want you to do. If you don't, they get rid of you. And if you don't like it, you go find another job. And so I dropped my membership, and it was really, really difficult to get out of. But once I dropped my membership, I realized there was no point, and I refused to ever join again. The first district I was a part of, it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't very popular. Not many people were part of it. Then I moved to another district that was a little bit more urban, and there were a few more people, but yet it was more populated, so it was still about 50-50. Then I moved to this district I work in now, and it's like 70-30, 80-20, something like that. Three-fourths of the teachers in the district I'm in now are part of the union. It's very strong where I'm at. They looked at me like I was crazy when I told them I wanted no parts of it.
Yeah.
So,
what do the people feel they're getting out of the union?
They truly, truly feel like they are getting security. They think that they are getting their protection and liability. They are so petrified of being sued that they think that, and they're also petrified of being treated and not getting their way, basically. I've seen teachers complain when the administrator switches their grade level, has them teach a different subject, you know, wants them to teach a certain curriculum a certain way, and if you know, the administrator wants them to work an extra 30 minutes one day for something. They go straight to the union, straight to the union, straight to the union. They want to fight everything. They don't want to do anything extra that's not in their contract. They're just afraid of doing something they're not going to get paid for, which, you know, we know salaries are low, but when you go into the job, you know that already.
Right.
So really the big one is protection and liability, and I always told people, well, first of all, I wouldn't trust a lawyer that somebody else is going to pick out for me. Second of all, I still have to pay for that lawyer even though they're going to, you know, hook me up with them. I'd rather just go get my own and pay for prepaid legal, which is a lot cheaper.
I have to wonder, all of the people that are unemployed, I would guess that a large number of them are probably union members or were while they were working. Of course, once you're unemployed, you don't pay union dues anymore, so you don't really belong to the union. What is the union doing for all these people that are unemployed? Nothing.
Nothing.
Well,
right.
Dick, were you in a union when you were a police officer?
Tom, I'm lucky to be alive. I'm from Minnesota. The union was the Teamsters. And for 25 years, I fought to get us out of the Teamsters. I said, we have no business belonging to the Teamsters. Why they didn't kill me, I don't know, because I was openly fighting for other unions.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and were you forced in Minnesota to belong to the union?
You did not have to belong, but let's say the union dues were $20 a month. If you didn't belong, you still had to pay $10 a month because you derived the benefits of the pay increases from them.
Oh, my God.
So you're still paying half the dues, but you don't have to belong to the union.
Yeah, I worked for the Commonwealth, and I had to be in the union as well.
All right. So everybody here on the show has been in a union. Now, I'm actually currently in a union. I will explain one thing about unions. Now, Teamsters, whatever you want to say about them, we got Jimmy Hoffa out there blowing his big fat mouth, and he's not too bright a guy. He says we're going to go after the Tea Partiers. Does he know how many union brothers he has that are Tea Partiers? So he just alienated all those people. I can tell you in the world of the airline pilots where every major airline in the U.S. is unionized, 90% of the pilots are conservative and might not consider themselves Tea Partiers, but they're certainly not liberal jackasses like Jimmy Hoffa. But there is one difference about unions that Jimmy Hoffa and Trumka and Obama and these other people will lead you to believe, that government unions are the same as private sector unions, and that when the government goes after and puts the kibosh on their own state and federal, whatever you know, whichever it is, unions, that has nothing to do with the free market system. That has absolutely nothing to do with other unions. So to say that we're going after the workers, no, we're going after the tax-paid workers, the workers that are paid by the taxpayer and the voter. I'm not being paid by the taxpayer. I'm being paid by customers when I go and do my job. The other thing is, even though they are government, when you talk about police, firefighters, law enforcement, and then talk about airlines and anybody else that would be involved in a safety and security type of industry, one of the things that I've found is very common among the unions is they're not just fighting for my vacation and my pay, but my airline would fly me at all hours of the day with less rest. I mean, you saw what happened to that commuter airplane about a year or so ago that went down. Highly underrested people that are trying to get their way, make their way up to the airlines. My union keeps you safe. That's the bottom line. Now, am I pro-union? I'm not saying that. But I think when it comes to the private sector, it's a fair game. You know, everything's fair. Some group wants to unionize, great. But I really dislike government unions. I'm opposed to government unions. And if you look at the federal government, those unions that exist do not have pay and benefits bargaining capability. They only have work rules. But there's ways to get around work rules so that you can get better pay and benefits. And we're not going to go into that stuff. But like the TSA unionizing, going to be a huge mistake. And just as you said, Rhonda, what's going to happen with the TSA agents is they're going to be told to do something or asked to do something. It's like, oh, that's not in my contract. I'm not doing
right.
it. And you're going to suddenly see service go way downhill when they unionize. That's my prediction in any case. So that's why I brought this up. I had a feeling that many of us on the show here have either been in a union or, in my case, am still in a union, and so I titled it Confessions of a Union Member. Not all union members are thugs standing on a street corner threatening people and going along with dumbass Jimmy Hoffa. Excuse my French, but that's what he is. The guy is a moron. He does not speak for all unions, and the Teamsters can, take a flying leap because they do represent some good organizations, but this guy is just a blowhard and a nut job.
Jimmy Hoffa is trying to mimic his father. He cannot fit into his father's shoes, and if he isn't careful, he will find out where father is.
Right.
Yeah, he's going to go. Yeah, go share some time, some resting time with whatever. But he's what he's done is think about what the purpose of a union is, and then what is he doing? He's supporting a Marxist regime that is a job-destroying and killing machine. So he's not representing his union brothers and sisters at all. He's destroying jobs by supporting this president, who has the worst record in modern history of destroying jobs and destroying an economy. So the guy, he's on a power trip, but he's not too bright. He's either just simply trying to save his own butt and enrich himself in the process, or he's just not very bright at all and doesn't get the correlation between destroying jobs and being the head of a union. But,
I would like to have all of the heads of the unions at one meeting with all of the news media from all of the stations there. I want to ask one question. What do we make in this country? What comes to this country that other countries are making that we used to make? Tell me how you're saving our jobs. You lost all our jobs to foreign countries.
Yeah.
The industry's gone. The car
industry's gone. This is precisely why a lot of these larger unions are now in support of amnesty for illegal immigrants. They see new union members and new union dues. When it used to be they were trying to protect their existing membership from illegal immigration, now they want to bring that into the fold because their numbers have been dwindling year after year after year. Another interesting fact is when it comes to like teachers unions and government unions, when the local government or the state government says we're not going to collect the dues anymore for the union members for the union, in other words, it'll just come out of your paycheck and then we'll hand it over to the union, the members themselves have to write checks and pay to the union. Guess what? Those unions just dissolve because when given the opportunity to not pay, most of them stop paying.
Yeah.
So I find that very interesting that has been occurring in these states that have kind of cracked down on the government unions.
Just for the record, I did discover in the past year and a half, 2 years, that there are some professional organizations that exist out there for teachers that are non-union organizations but offer the same protections, liability insurance, workshops, professional development, grants. One of them is based out of California. It's called the American Association or Association of American Educators. And there's another one local to Florida called the Professional Educators Network. And it's like half the price or less. It's $15 a month as opposed to $50 or $75 a month. Same benefits.
Yeah, exactly. And I knew there had to be. I'm glad you brought that up. But I was going to say, you could organize with your fellow teachers there and go hire a law firm, not hire them, but put them on retainer to help cover any kind of issues that might come up, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it would be a lot cheaper than paying dues month after month after year.
Right.
Now, I have to be careful because my own union wouldn't like me saying these things, but my union is the unique union. And you look at our contract and you see so many things in there that have to do with safety of flight issues that we, without our contract, really, quite honestly, and most airlines that I'm aware of, would not be operating as safely as they are today. So we care about not only our passengers, we care about ourselves and our families, and so we push for those things that the union, that I can tell you this right now, the FAA regulations, the FAR regulations that we fall under are nowhere near the level of safety in terms of limitations on what we can do. We could really be working our pilots a lot harder and risking more. And I know what I'm talking about because I have a significant background in aviation safety from my Navy days and then consulting days. So it really is something that's important. So do I mind being in the union? Well, here's one thing. My union doesn't tell me who to vote for. They don't send me a little sample ballot and say, Tom, this is who you should be voting for, like some of the I've seen happen with police and fire department unions. They hand their people, here's who you should be voting for. Now, they don't have to, and there's no way of knowing, but my union would never, ever attempt to tell me who to vote for in any local, all the way up to presidential race, because they know that that would really tick us off. And so, in any case, there are some differences out there. But life, I think here's what becomes the biggest problem in union management relations. It's the butting in and interfering of the government. The government's got to mediate. The government's got rules and laws. Well, all of a sudden, then it's not a free enterprise. Free enterprise operations is regulated now, and the government gets to pick winners and losers. You know, they decide that one company's too big to fail, and anybody out there that's a liberal Democrat, when we went on strike back in the 90s, us pilots, around, I think maybe it was 97, Bill Clinton stepped in and ordered us back to work after just 20 minutes. So to say that Democrats are all pro-union is an outright lie. It depends on whether you're a politically correct union or not. If you're not, then guess what? We're against you. So they're complete hypocrites about this when it comes to it. And if the government would just stay out of the whole business altogether, then unions and management would work things out in a more equitable way. I truly believe that. So that's my two cents on it. But
can I back up just a little bit, Tom?
Sure, please.
You had made a comment about the teachers taking care of themselves. When I told you I was fighting the Teamsters, the St. Paul Police Department, they have their own federation, their own little union within their own department, and of course you have to be a working officer to be a member of the union or an officer. I tried for 3 years to get our department to merge with St. Paul's union so we would just be our own little union. We wouldn't be Teamsters or anybody else. It would be policemen representing policemen. St. Paul finally agreed to accept us. I went to our meetings, and, of course, the Teamsters are there. And I'm saying, folks, guess what? St. Paul will accept us. All we have to do is vote to drop out of Teamsters. They turned me down.
Yeah,
they were afraid of the Teamsters.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, there is some advantage to being a member of a large group like that. We've looked at that in the past, but my own union is just us. The Allied Pilots Union is just American Airlines pilots. And so we are our own union of pilots representing pilots. Not always the smartest thing, quite honestly. You've got to hire outsiders that have certain expertise. But we're not beholden to some, you know, larger national group that might have a different agenda. And that's why we left. We were originally members of ALPA, whatever that stands for, which represents a lot of the other carriers. So there is an advantage and some disadvantages to being a smaller union, but we always felt that the advantages outweighed the disadvantages, and so here we are. But well, that's good. Good discussion about unions. Now, Rhonda, anything else you'd like to tell people about what kind of effect Agenda 21 is having on our schools, where they can find out more information about this on the web, or are there any upcoming seminars?
I don't have any of that information. I would lead people to their local 9/12 groups, their local Tea Party groups, and it's pretty widespread information throughout the Tea Party groups and the 9/12 groups. And any of those people could be great resources. As far as the schools go, like we said, the biggest thing is the history is disappearing and changing, one or the other.
Yeah.
And I highly recommend and highly encourage parents to pay attention, to what your children are doing in school. Pay attention to videos that they're watching. Listen to what your kids say when they come home. And if you hear anything that is anything of resemblance to Agenda 21 and what we've talked about, go talk to the school and educate them. You know, don't go angrily, because most of them don't realize it, but just go educate them and go in nicely, and they may be willing to listen to parents. They're not going to listen to me, but definitely bring it to their attention and try to educate them so that they're more aware of what they're doing. My other big recommendation is just to start, if you can't change it, just take your kids out of the public schools. Get them out of the public schools, and people will start wondering why. Why are people leaving the public schools, which they're already doing? Homeschool, private school, charter schools, any other option.
As far as them not knowing what they're doing, I have to disagree with you, Rhonda, at least as far as the school board is concerned.
We have
approached the school board, tried to explain to them what they're doing, and asked them for a meeting. They have yet to say they will meet with us, and that's been half a year, almost a year ago.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
and
I know
we're
Diane
telling them what they're
mentioned.
Doing wrong, and we just want to meet with them and say, this is what's happening, we got to change it.
Right. I know Diane has been big on the IB research, the International Baccalaureate Program, and that's a big hoo-ha there in itself. She's got all that information.
I know she's tried to
contact them and get in touch with them, and they won't respond to her either.
I know what she told me is she started with the state about the textbooks and about the IB curriculum, all that kind of stuff. And they keep shoving it down to the counties, and all the counties don't do that. It's the districts, and then you go to the superintendents and the principals, and nobody is going over the textbooks. Nobody has turned, there's no rules just to say who's supposed to review them. So nobody is.
Right.
Yeah,
she's been going round and round in circles with that.
She has.
Well, somebody needs to bring this to the attention of their state legislator. And as the election cycle heats up, maybe some of them will start looking, because they are looking for something to make themselves look good and stand out in the crowd. That remains to be seen.
We need better legislators before we can do that.
I'll plug James DeCook. He's running for state senate to oust Thad Altman. Thad Altman is a rhino that we need to get rid of. So take a good look at James DeCook. I support him. I've known him for some years now. He's a smart man, a good man, and he'd do a fantastic job in that role. But we'll have him on the show here soon, and we'll learn more about him. Any last words, any last thoughts, Rhonda, before we move on?
That's it. Just pay attention.
Okay.
Pay attention.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, and enjoy the presidential debate tonight.
I will.
Thank you for coming on tonight. And let's see, Dick, any predictions for the presidential debate tonight?
I think after the debates tonight, Perry will be gone.
I hope so.
Yeah. Okay. It sounds like maybe my audio has been having some problems. Are we doing okay tonight? Are we doing okay now?
Yes.
Yes, we are. One thing I would like to interject about Perry is anybody that knows about Agenda 21 and the New World Order, he is on the Bilderberger participation list.
Right.
I don't trust him. A lot of his backing of the illegal aliens, all the jobs that he's made in Texas are minimum wage. He's already given illegal aliens free tuition, and I think he's
for open borders with Mexico.
Right. As far as I'm concerned, he's
come all you Mexicans, enjoy our welfare.
He sounds like a Chris Christie to me, who's a major league rhino as well. So I don't know what the answer is. But here's my prediction for tonight is that because Perry jumped way out there in the forefront, you're going to see somebody or some people in this debate try and take a swipe or two at him. And depending on how good he is on his feet, his response, if you think about past presidential debates, sometimes the response packs a lot more punch than that initial punch. So people have to be careful. If they're going to take a swipe at him, they better have thought it through very, very closely. And I'm sure he's going to be ready for a, you know, sharp comeback. So that's my prediction, that there are going to be some swipes taken at him, a little bit of sniping going on. I'd like to see Herman Cain do better. I really like Herman Cain.
Yeah.
I'm not endorsing anybody at this point. But, yeah, we've got to somebody's got to stand out here. And I don't really like the real standouts yet so far. So, but at the same time,
the only one.
I will vote for a candidate before I would vote for Obama, vote for anything to get rid of him. And that's the goal. You know, liberals will say, you guys, you have no substance because you just want, all you care about is getting rid of Obama. Well, all you liberals cared about was getting rid of Bush. So there you go. Too bad. Paula, do you have any have a prediction for tonight?
I'm not a Perry supporter by any means. I mean, you know, six of one half, one of the other. But I'm thinking Perry Romney are going to be very close with Ron Paul, Michelle Bachmann, and everybody else following through. And as far as giving jabs, I'm wondering if Newt Gingrich is going to get in there and try to jab him.
He tends to do that
Newt,
at times. If somebody's going to do it, I wouldn't be surprised if it was Newt.
Newt is
yeah.
one of the New World Order people, too. I'm sorry, Tom, but I've got a video.
Yeah, no, I understand. There's a lot of – unfortunately, we got a lot of those surrounding
yeah.
us these days. Well, Ann, what's your prediction for tonight?
Personally, I'd like to see Ron Paul and Herman Cain pull up and figure out maybe Michelle Bachmann and I don't know who else to get in there to pick a team from those three. That's what I'd like,
okay.
but that's not necessarily a prediction.
Right. Yeah.
I seen something on the internet tonight, and I was looking for it. I believe it's in Texas. They are thinking of taking the American flags out of the schools because it might offend the Mexican students.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't heard that one. That's going to be a vicious rumor. I mean, you know, I can't see that happening. But we'll see. We'll see. I'll have to check into it. There might be like just one particular school, but I don't think they would do that statewide. They're just.
I would make a trip to Texas and burn Mexican flags out in the street.
Yeah. Well, here's what you have to do. All you have to do is say, hey, if you're going to take the American flag out, then you have to take the Texas flag out. Oh, they love that Texas flag, so that'll never happen.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Rhonda, are you still on?
Like
you have a prediction tonight?
I'm still here, yeah. I don't have a prediction, but I'm like Ann. I really like Herman Cain, and I'm a big Herman Cain fan right now. So I'm really cheering him on, and I hope he does really well tonight.
Yeah, I'd love to see Herman Cain in a debate with Obama. He'd just shred us to pieces. Oh, my gosh. And nobody could say, he's a racist. Oh,
yeah.
You know, he's a traitor.
Got that.
Because
right.
Remember what Lloyd Marcus told us? He got called a traitor for being a Republican. And it's just that kind of mindset, the race baiting that is going on right now is just disgusting. And who's doing it all? It's the Democrats. They're the ones that are supposed to be above the fray, and yet they're doing all of the race baiting right now and playing the race card and all of the incivilities coming from the Democrats. And the media just kind of glosses over it, doesn't pay too much attention.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I think it'll be a interesting debate. It's going to be kicking off in about 15 minutes. I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And Paula, we'll give you the last word as usual.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thank everybody for coming on tonight. Rhonda, it was really nice meeting you. Shout out to our troops serving overseas. We just celebrated Labor Day, and your families love and miss you very much. We're going on a 10-year anniversary on the 11th, and we want you home.
All right. Awesome.
I can start. All right,
everybody.
Good
night. We'll
see you all
again on Wednesday. I think we'll do this the same time on Wednesday, 7 p.m., if it works out for everybody. And have a safe rest. I'm sorry, Monday. Yeah, this is Wednesday. All right, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.